Hey, everybody. This is Season 2, Episode 8, also known as Episode 40 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Hugh, and joining me, fresh off buying all the surgical masks he can at Costco, Rob.
Yeah, so if the audio is off this time, it's because I have 7 surgical masks on, so I just sound muffled.
I do like that the surgeon general, I don't know their name, actually sent a message out saying, hey, don't buy surgical masks. It doesn't actually do anything unless you're sick.
Yeah. And you don't need 800 of them.
Yes. You know who needs them? Doctors. So don't buy all the surgical masks. Oh, yeah. So I posted this article. It's actually kind of a repost. This is like an article I wrote a few years ago and then took down because I thought it was kind of dumb. And then rewrote, which is a review of the Sony Data Discman. I'll put a link to it out here in the show notes. But the Data Discman is this $500 ebook reader from the early 90s that I got for something like $5, along with a review of the couple of books that I have for it.
Yeah, and you said it's pretty much using a DOS variant, right?
Yeah. So all the discs basically are booting some DOS program, it looks like. I think you probably could technically run DOS on this thing if you, you know, could buy a bunch. The problem is there's no, like, media cards. You know, there's no way to, like, load, like, I don't have a dev kit for this, so to test out if you could run DOS on it, you would have to burn like an 8, whatever, what are those size, what size CDs are these? They're like the GameCube size discs.
Yeah, so they're like 3-inch or something.
Well, I don't know. You have to buy a bunch of those, burn them, test them. So, like, this would be the world's greatest Zork player.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's completely useless. But if you want to play around with it, I posted most of the discs actually come with an emulator on the disc, which is kind of crazy. So you can emulate it and look up an encyclopedia from 1991. I managed to get a limited run games game. I always lament that, like, the way they release games is sort of like optimized for scalpers who don't have a job or their job is scalping.
Yeah, you have to, like, book a meeting for yourself at work so you're, like, able to actually purchase it, right?
Right, because they only do it on Fridays, and it's at the kind of hours that most people are either, like, they do a morning batch when most people are just walking into the office, or in, like, afternoon batch when most people are commuting home. Yeah. So you kind of have to find, like, a time in the day when you can sneak out to purchase a game at the exact second it goes live.
Yeah.
Which, it's an interesting, I like what they're doing. Like, I don't want to complain about them too much, but just, like, their distribution model, you almost think they could just do, like, I mean, maybe they can't for whatever reason, where you could just say, hey, we're going to just have open pre-orders, and anybody who wants to pre-order something can, and however many pre-orders we get, that's how many we'll print. But they probably can't get away with that.
Yeah.
So they did a re-release. I only bought one of these. They somehow are doing a re-release of Sega CD games, Monkey Island and Rebel Assault. So these are both LucasArts games. Mm-hmm. Gets me kind of optimistic that maybe LucasArts is thinking of selling some of their old IP again. Like, maybe they're going to do a collection. I don't know.
That would be nice.
Would be nice. So I bought I bought Monkey Island. I did not buy Rebel Assault because I actually have physical copies of both of these, but Monkey Island, I don't have the box because it was a cardboard box game, mm-hmm. and none of those ever survived. Not that the hard case Sega CD game survived particularly long either. But really, it came out to, I don't really like Star Wars Rebel Assault that much.
Neither do I, really, actually. Yeah.
So,
like, the idea of it.
Yeah, but the Sega, especially on Sega CD, it's just not a great game. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of felt like, I guess I don't need another copy of this game.
Yeah, if they updated some of their DOS games, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Right, that would be a pretty awesome collection if they could somehow manage that. It actually looks like, even though I made a point to go out and buy them, you can still purchase, at least Rebel Assault, they say, is still available.
Oh, nice.
So they did not sell out whatever their limit is of Rebel Assault. And then they have like premium edition for $75, which, man, I don't know.
I don't know what comes in what's premium about it?
I don't know, man. The Monkey Island premium edition, which they also still have, includes a rigid box. Art cards, poster, pin, and an Ask Me About Loom button.
That's actually kind of funny.
Yeah, so I guess people don't think that's worth $75.
Some people will. I've been good at not buying everything lately. It caught up to me. My bank account is pretty drained.
Yeah, I've been... That I mean, it's not so much a money thing, but just like, no, I really don't need another Rebel Assault. I'm good.
Yeah. Another one you won't play.
I have no desire to ever play. I will play Monkey Island again, but I will never play Rebel Assault again. So what have you been up to?
It feels like it's been a while since we've talked. Last week, I went with no internet for 5 days. Now, I actually have backup internet here, but you can't stream with it. You know, I only have so many gigs on it, so I don't want to use them up for anything other than work. And so, at first they said it was an area-wide outage, and then they told me it was emergency maintenance for the area-wide outage. And then a day or two went by, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's been done for a while. We'll send someone out. And then I told them, cool. Can you just look on the outside of the house? Because everything on the inside's fine. Like, I'm a network admin. All is good on the inside. And they're like, yeah, no problem. Let's just send him out to check out some stuff on the outside. Day one, he shows up, knocks on the door, and leaves because I'm not there. He just doesn't read his notes that I'm not going to be there. Day two, he shows up, same thing. Day three, he finally calls. Luckily, I was driving home. We get it sorted out. He had to run a new line across the street. Cops show up. They're very cool to them. They leave. Some not great human being in a pickup truck rolls up, starts screaming at them, gets out of his car and moves their cones they used to divert traffic with. And so I got a little show out of that, but yeah. Pretty entertaining.
What was this guy mad about?
He said that they needed some different license to do that or something, but I'm pretty sure the cable company can divert traffic if they're running lines across a busy intersection. It's not busy intersection, just a intersection. And yeah. This guy got diverted like a 25th of a mile. That's how long the detour is, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, people need to chill out, you know?
Yeah, I went out there and talked to the guys and pretty much said, like, hey, man, if that guy's upset about this, like, he's probably just... there's no reason arguing. He's just upset about everything. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so I actually got it on video and got to send it to the cable company saying how good job they did dealing with it. But, yeah, on cooler stuff, other than that... the great people at libretro/retroarch fixed another bug I found. So they're so responsive. So I just wanted to give them a shout out and a thank you. Because not only is it cool that they're responsive on GitHub, but they actually fix it and then they thank you for telling them about the bug. You know, it's just a really rare group of individuals there. So high five to them. And then... on the Switch, I've been playing some Sega Forces, a game that had got horrible reviews, and I'm sorry, I like it. It was like $16, so I figured why not buy another Sonic game? Yeah, it's really fast. What I like about it is really the character building. It has some of the most gratifying character building I think I've ever done, but it's still simple. You know, and the bad about it is... a lot of the bad guys and a lot of the things you need to jump on and stuff mix in with the environment. So unless you play the level over and over again, like many Sonic games, you don't really know what you're doing. But I'd say check it out. You know, if you like Sonic, especially like Sonic Mania and Sonic Adventure, yeah, I thought it was great, and it's pretty cheap right now. So, yeah, that's what I've been up to. Should we dive into some news?
Yeah, let's do that. What do we have in news here? Ultima Exodus Remastered Hack. So, have you played Ultima Exodus on the NES?
No.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, overall a pretty good port. Because, you know, you have to take what was originally a computer game and sort of make it... you could do like a straight port of, you know, PC to NES, but that usually does not go well. I can think of a few games, kind of the SSI games, that where they tried to do that and the results were bad. Ultima Exodus was a pretty good port to begin with. But this is a hack that just added a bunch of like graphical and play enhancements. So it's this might be a first time hacker. I don't know if I've seen anything else that they've done before. But a lot of like the like there's these 3D dungeons. I say it's 3D. You aren't moving like real time through a 3D dungeon. You know, think of them like maybe a lower tech version of the Phantasy Star dungeons. And they really improved how those look. They changed some of the monster AI and made some of the classes a little more distinct. So it's a pretty neat pretty neat ROM hack they did.
Nice. And this is just something you would play in an emulator or EverDrive or something?
Yeah, yeah. So you'd get the IPS file, and if you have a system that supports patching natively, otherwise you have to patch it yourself.
Cool. You can now buy a brand new Apple II Plus motherboard?
Yes. So I just learned about this site here. Well, this site, I know the site that we're linking to, I heard about. The site they're linking to, I had not heard of. So over on vintageisthenewold.com, they have an article here linking to a store called Reactive Micro, which is, they're selling brand new Apple II Plus motherboards. And I guess depending what model you want or what, there's a bunch of like, whether it's a kit or whether it's assembled, the price changes. They say the price goes from $175 to $430. Again, depending which, they have a variety of options you can choose from here. But yeah, it's a board if you want to build your own or replace your Apple II Plus motherboard.
Yeah, yeah, and this is a great store, actually. It pretty much has all your Apple II needs right in one spot. Yeah, I like how they say that this board, like, hey, you may have an Apple II that you put this board in and it doesn't work. That's because, like, this is getting you to a good starting point. Like, you may have a bad power supply or something else. Like, this board works and you know it's going to work. So you can worry about everything else.
Or you just want the experience of assembling an Apple II from parts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I have never done, but I hear people did back in the day.
Yeah. Some sad news. Konami code creator
I'm so sad. It feels terrible because he passed away. Let's go with Kazuhisa Hashimoto.
Sounds about right. Hashimoto.
Yes.
Yes. The creator of the infamous Konami code passed away. It's really sad. You know, he started it out in Gradius because he wasn't getting far enough in the game while testing it, so he just needed more lives. And it got into, if you're listening to this podcast, you realize it got into many, many games. But even this article, they list a few games that I didn't know it was in. So,
Because really some games just some non-Konami games copied it.
Yeah, yeah, which I had no idea. But yeah, I mean, it's a staple of pop culture. It's a staple of pop culture that will be around for a long, long time.
So, yes. Yeah.
End of an era.
If you like point-and-click adventure / horror games, Polygon just reviewed a new game called World of Horror. This is probably better to play around Halloween time, but it looks like a black and white Mac Venture game. But also looks completely terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it, I mean, if somehow you haven't seen Mac graphics, Return of the Oberdin is a newer game that looks like this as well. Yeah, World of Horror.
Yes.
What's this available on? Does it say?
I'm going to assume PC. Oops, I accidentally clicked on something. Now I can't. Wait, sorry. I clicked on something. Now I'm on a completely different site. I don't know how that happened.
But yeah, it looks like a lot of like creepy zombie looking women and stuff like that.
So it is on Steam. If you go to WOHgame.com for worldofhorrorgame.com, it is currently on Steam and it is headed to Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4, they say.
Nice.
So this might be a good thing to pick up on Switch for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and on Steam, it's early access, so it's clearly not done yet.
Cool. I mean, there's something you want to wait till around Halloween anyway.
Yeah.
And some long time coming news. The ZX Spectrum Next arrives. This is on Hackaday. And yeah, they got their hands on the real, we're in America, so ZX Spectrum Next. But, yeah, it has an optional 7 megahertz clock speed, upgraded 512K of memory, and you can use a Raspberry Pi Zero to accelerate it, which that's really neat. I wonder how they pulled that part off.
So, like, you use it like a coprocessor?
I guess, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to look into how they did that.
But, yeah, I'm not, I mean, it really, I've, outside of, you know, at a game show, I've really never touched a ZX Spectrum.
Same, yeah. There's no nostalgia factor for me, so this is not something for me.
I mean, if I had grown up in UK, obviously different story. Mm-hmm. It might be kind of cool to learn how to program it, but I got a lot of other programming projects I want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got some Streets of Rage 4 and Golden Axe figures coming.
Yeah, this is a really short article, but at the New York Toy Fair 2020, this company released Streets of Rage 4 and Golden Axe toys. Well, figures. So you can't really play with them. You could just stand them up on a shelf. But they look kind of cool. I like the skeleton guy, but there's not a picture of all of them here, but... If you're a collector of this kind of stuff, I would definitely look out for this. Of course, they are $130 for the set, so not very cheap.
I have like two Street Fighter vinyl pop figures, and I bought them when Toys R Us was going out of business. So that's as much as I'm willing to spend on figures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not going to be getting these.
How about, would you get a pop-up book of classic Sega arcade cabinets?
No, I would not get that either. I'm kind of surprised. I could swear this thing came out like years ago. Maybe I just remember a Kickstarter for it or something.
Possibly. I don't... This is on boingboing.net, which I think we've been on before. And I don't see a date on this, so...
Yeah, it sure seems like something I remember hearing about before.
I just clicked on the article it links to, and I don't see a date here either. Well, it links to the store. Readonlymemory.vg. But yeah, so this is a pop-up book of Sega arcade games. So like Hang On, Space Harrier, Outrun, Afterburner, that kind of thing. It's a really neat picture of the Space Harrier one, the sit-down cabinet.
Yeah, I suspect people buying this aren't actually going to take the models out and make them. No, you don't make them, right? They're in the book, the pop-up book.
Yeah, oh, I think it's just a book.
I thought it was one of these kits you took the things out and assembled it. No, look at that. It's a pop-up book.
Let me see.
Why did I think it was a build-your-own kit?
Because it kind of looks like a Labo type thing, but Yeah, I'm looking at this video now, and it looks... Oh, this guy's just saying it looks like augmented reality.
It's not. Not really. And, no, if you could play the games on the cardboard screen, that would be augmented reality, right?
Actually, that's a really good idea. Like, yeah, with some AR headset or something.
So I could get like an AR headset, and I could be at, like at meetings at work, but actually playing Pac-Man?
Yes, exactly, yeah. Like okay. On Google Glass or something. Light News Week, that's it.
It is, yes. So we have a topic, no big name interviews this week, maybe next time. But we're going to talk about kind of a fun little subject that I don't think we've talked about before. NES password generators. So there's a lot of NES games that use passwords. And for every one of them, just about, there is a password generator. So a program you can use to generate a password with, you know, things you can't even do in the game, perhaps. And a lot of these are fun. We tried to pick ones that are JavaScript-based over ones that, like, you have to download a program from some rando site and run it and hope it doesn't have a virus.
Yeah.
Most of these, I'm sure, like, if I wanted to hack someone's computer, I would not do it by making a Mega Man 4 password generator. Be a very, very, like a very targeted hack.
But if you hosted it on SourceForge, then they would do that part for you.
Yes. You know, I haven't had Twitter in a long time. Very, very long time. But I did have a Twitter account when Microsoft bought GitHub. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And there are a lot of people complaining about how long it took my projects off GitHub now that Microsoft owns it. And I'm like, so what are you going to do? Move your app to SourceForge, the ad delivery network that occasionally hosts source control, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And the CEO of SourceForge responded to me.
What'd he say?
He said, oh, yeah, we know in the past we've had a lot of, you know, bad reputation, but we're really doing a lot to clean up. And, you know, we don't do some one of the, you know, we sing about like we don't do embedded ads in the downloads anymore. You should come check out our site. Right. And then I replied with a screenshot of me going to SourceForge with my ad block console open. Like... SourceForge, I don't know who has more ads, SourceForge or weather.com. I want you to really try each of those sites. I eventually installed Pi-hole, so I never see any ads when I'm at home.
Yeah.
But those sites, I mean, are just, they're, I get it. Like you have to make money somehow. I understand that. But SourceForge is like the spammiest site on the planet.
Well, it's because they have links that look like they'll have an ad that is a download button. You know what I mean? So you think you're downloading what you went there for. And
yes.
You're not.
All right, now I can kind of see how many ads they have because they show up as like 404s in my browser. because again, they try. So let's see. One console. Okay. Oh man. So I have a.fsdn.com blocked. So anything external blocked by client means Pi-hole's catching it. So something called fsdn.net blocked. ml314.com, that's got to be an ad site, blocked. Google Analytics, I guess that's not a big deal. ads.promarket.net. crsxpxl, so crsspixel.com. ads.linkedin.com. Ad roll dot, that's 7 ad sites on their page so far. I've gotten up to.
Jeez.
So
anyway,
maybe the CEO is listening to this podcast too, and they can explain how, like, I get it. 7 ads is an improvement over where SourceForge was before, which was like 90 ads per page.
it's kind of the content of the ads too.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah. And again, the whole hidden, like, exactly. Like you think you're downloading something, you're downloading an ad. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Evil.
But password generators.
Password generators, many of which have their source code available on GitHub, like the first one we're going to talk about here. This is the coolest. There's been a lot of Metroid password generators written over the years. It's pretty well understood how to hack Metroid passwords. There's one here called truepeacein.space. So they went and got like a nice vanity domain for this and everything. And they put their code out. And this is like an interactive thing where you can click off like how many doors you've opened, which mini boss statues you've activated, which missiles you've gotten, how many hours you've been playing. So you could put yourself like right up next to the mother brain with everything defeated and, you know, you've played for 0 seconds if you wanted to. You can just do all kinds of crazy stuff with this.
I tried to type in Justin Bailey, but something with the JavaScript wouldn't let me just type it in.
Yes, it does. You have to do it all caps. I just tried it.
Okay.
All caps and then minus sign for the rest of it.
And then you can, that was the problem.
And then you can see what kind of like that legendary password that everybody knows. Let me do it right now. So yeah, the problem there is you couldn't come up with that yourself because like it has some absurd number for hours of playtime. And then some combination of missiles and doors opened and energy tanks that you would just never get to. Like, you would never figure it out on your own.
Oh, yeah, that did work for me. Yeah, that is insane.
And you can see by just clicking random things how the password changes just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, ah. Okay, so sorry. I was playing with that password generator.
You could even make it so Samus is wearing her swimsuit or whatever.
Yeah, you could do that. So over on DougBabcock.com, that is his name, he has a personal page, and the actual homepage doesn't have much, but he has two password generators, Metal Gear password generator and Mike Tyson Punch-Out password generator.
Mm-hmm.
And the Metal Gear one is really the cooler. I mean, Punch-Out is neat. But Metal Gear, again, because you can like check off each type of equipment and different events that have happened in the game and how much ammo you have, basically everything, anything that would be in that password. So that one's kind of cool. You big Metal Gear player back in the day?
No, I wasn't. Me and my buddy played it when it was fairly new, but I dropped off it I just dropped off it.
Right. Over on danweber.blogspot.com, there is a Strider password generator.
Yeah.
Now, I did not play a ton of Strider, but this certainly looks like it would be helpful.
So, if I remember right, you do not like the original Strider arcade.
I do not. I like the NES version much better.
That was going to be my question. Me too. And I think that's a rare thing. I think most people like arcade or Genesis Strider, but I like, there's something, maybe it's because I played the NES one first. But
yeah, I did play the NES one first, but it's more, has more like adventure elements to it. Like the original arcade game is just kind of a straight up action game, but it's not, I don't know, it's like a slow action game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it has the Altered Beast problem where it's like nice big sprites, but they barely move.
Right. So, yeah, I definitely like the NES version better. I played it more. I don't believe I've ever finished it.
I think it was one of the first games I actually finished. You know, thinking like, wow, I can't believe I did this.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Mega Man 2 through 5.
Yes. So we have links to a whole bunch of them. Again, I tried to favor JavaScript and open source ones over... some DOS application that was written in the 90s. So this Mega Man 2 one's an interactive one. I guess there's not much to the Mega Man 2 password. It's just which bosses have you defeated. And how many energy things you have. So it looks pretty simple. I have not ever won Mega Man 2 because I'm terrible at it. And the Mega Man 3 one, also JavaScript-based, kind of the same deal. Basically, they're all the same password generator. Castlevania 2, we got out here too. That's another kind of little JavaScript app where you can check off what items you have, how much garlic you have. Been a while since I played it, so I forgot about that. How many days have elapsed? I assume that has something to do with the ending. Or do you get like a hard game over if you don't finish the game in a certain number of days?
I can't remember. It's been a while.
Because there is a max on number of days elapsed in the game of 9 that makes me think that if you don't kill Dracula after 9 days, you must die at that point or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, what else? Got a couple more cool ones here. Willow. So some people think of it as being a Zelda knockoff. It maybe is. I don't. It is a little bit, but I don't think it's that bad. So this, like, the colors on this page maybe are a little bit irritating, but the user interface is pretty easy. You're just checking off what items you found, and then there's a drop-down list for how many levels you've gained, and then it generates a little password.
Mm-hmm.
And then different events. I don't know what any of these events mean, because it's been a very long time since I played Willow. See, game we talked about last episode, River City Ransom Password Generator. Which I forgot that game had a password. Did you remember River City Ransom had a password?
No, I don't. It's been a while since I played most of these games, other than Strider Metroid and let's see, Prince of Persia.
Yeah, Prince of Persia, I also forgot had a password. I thought you just played through that straight. I know it's a long game, but I thought it had nothing. A couple more. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, but that one is almost just what level you're on.
Right. Yeah, I think that's it. So, an extremely underrated game, Battle of Olympus. So this is this has another one that's all sort of event based. And then there's some sort of like extra encoding scheme. Like it somewhat complicated password system here, but this little JavaScript thing makes it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Battle of Olympus, have not played.
I'm looking it up right now. That name sounds so familiar that... I can't remember. It looks familiar, but yeah, I can't remember. Was this obscure? 1988?
Maybe a little bit. It's often compared to Zelda 2.
Hmm.
Sort of stylistically, it is kind of a Zelda 2 clone. Not really clone, but it's similar. So you can compare it to Zelda 2 or like East 3 in terms of style.
Huh. And Radical Entertainment that did it apparently contributed to Destiny, that newer online game. So they are still around. Interesting. Anyway, sorry, passwords.
Yeah, passwords. Looks like maybe three left. Prince of Persia. So this is a different... This is not so much a password generator as... I mean, it has a password generator. But then they also wrote a script to generate all possible valid passwords in Prince of Persia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you have round, level, and time are all things. Does Prince of Persia also have a time limit?
I have no idea.
It looks like it goes up to 99 and then something bad happens.
Huh.
But yes, they've generated programmatically all close to 1 million valid passwords.
That's because why not, right?
Because why not?
And then Dragon Slayer 4/Legacy of the Wizard.
Yes, depending what region you're in, that's what it's called. And Falcom, it was the original developer of this game. And what I've learned here is that they have very complex passwords.
Yes.
And I think some of it is because they include like a checksum in all their passwords, which just pads out the length of the password. Whereas some of these other password systems don't. Like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, there's no checksum.
Mm-hmm.
But Falcom tries to make it hard to hack their passwords. And they clearly have succeeded, because this Legacy of the Wizard password does not look like something you'd ever want to enter. I own this game, but I've only ever played it on emulator, so I just use save states. So I was ignorant.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then I really like this last one you got. TASVideos.org has a password generator for many NES games. So Mega Man 2 through 6, Castlevania 2, Metroid, Solar Jetman, Guardian Legend, Faxanadu, or Foe Xanadu, and Battle of Olympus.
Yes.
And they're all really easy to use. I'm glad you brought this up as a topic, because... you know, we play a lot of retro games, and sometimes we just want to jump in at some point or get better at one level. And I usually just go to GameFAQ for stuff like this. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about just finding a password generator.
Yeah, or just starting the game at maximum level.
Yeah, just to play it, just to see if you like it. Yeah. Well, cool. Any closing thoughts on that?
No, I mean, there's still a few games that seem to be missing password generators. So every time I look at it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go write a Tombs and Treasure password generator because no one's done that before. And then I'm like, oh, wait, this seems like a lot of work. Now I'm not going to do it.
Yes.
So thank you to everybody who took the time to write these, because they all look like, I think Metroid was done, though, that algorithm was figured out before people had decompiled the game.
Yeah.
So they just reverse engineered it. Some of these come from decompilations, which doesn't necessarily make them easier. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we should revisit this someday with a different system. I mean, passwords kind of stopped being a thing whenever memory cards became a thing. So I would say, like, Sega... Well, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, TurboGrafx, that was a big deal. Because you'd have to buy the Turbo Booster or have a Duo, you know? But yeah, I'm trying to think what other systems had a ton of passwords. Did Master System?
So Master System, the games I'm thinking of offhand are all battery backup games. Mm-hmm. So those don't count. I mean, like, there are a number of RPGs with battery backups. Well, Dragon... So Wonder Boy, Dragon's Curse, and or Trap, depending what system you're playing it on, has a password system.
That's right, because I played the modernization of it, and if you go to save and you're in 8-bit mode, which I was, it shows you the password. Mm-hmm. What I didn't know is it also saved.
Okay.
So every time I saved, I took a picture of the screen with my phone.
Yes. So the fun thing about owning Dragon's Curse and or Trap back in the day is in the Master System version, there was a manual, and the manual had a picture of the password screen. Like, here's a password. You know what I mean? Like, here's how you enter it. And the password in that screenshot worked, but it was almost like the Justin Bailey password. It was like, you're at the end of the game, you have all the power-ups, everybody, like, so it must have been a code that they gave to, like, all their developers to use to, like, oh, go in and test fighting all these bosses, because you're at max power with every upgrade, right? And whoever wrote the manual was probably given that password, too.
Yeah.
And they just screenshotted it. So if you read the manual, then you got the super password. I'm pretty sure Zillion on the Master System had a password. And
yeah, we'll have to do this one again with different systems.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole password thing did start to kind of die down in the 16-bit era because more games just came with battery backups. But I remember, like, Populous for Genesis had a password system, but the password was just a word, you know, like a dictionary word. And it was just, you know, certain words unlocked different levels. So it wasn't, like, you know, something you could decompile. And then, you know, the other part is games just got too big to work with a password. I mean, can you imagine, like, trying to do a password for Final Fantasy VI?
Exactly, yeah. Just not possible. Too many variables.
Yeah. So you would have to enter a novel, and you get one letter wrong, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and it's not like you could copy and paste into it.
Although, it would be nice if they had password systems, because so many of these carts have dead batteries now.
Yeah, but you could change most of those, right?
You know, I've never really tried. They're not, like,
yeah,
just soldered in.
I've changed my Zelda battery. Yeah, it's just like a little, one of those little cylindrical, flat, silver batteries.
Really? Why have I not done this?
Well, if they're still working, it's like, why? You know?
Well, I mean, I have a couple copies of Phantasy Star. I know those batteries are dead. I should go change
those. Open it up and then run to Walgreens or whatever.
Oh, dollars. So because I have a lot of Christmas ornaments, we're kind of like insane about weird Christmas. My wife has like a whole tree that's just Star Wars Christmas ornaments. And all those are battery powered. And pretty much every year we have to get a few batteries. And it's like, you can go to Walgreens and pay $8 for a single battery. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to Dollar Tree and get like 20 of them in a pack for a dollar. Yeah, it's completely insane. All right. Talk about some Game Club games.
Sure. Yeah. Mine's up there first, so I guess I'll start. I did Galaxian because Arabian Prince picked that game. Again, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know Galaxian. But yeah, it's kind of the precursor to Galaga, and it kind of ripped off Space Invaders, I guess.
Yeah, it's a Space Invaders clone, except the aliens don't. They don't descend like in a row. Like one or two will come down to attack you at a time.
Exactly. Yeah, and they fly at different angles, and they look like bugs. And yeah, and so I played a few versions of this. I played the arcade version on MAME, and yeah, it's a fun game. You know, it gets old kind of fast. I really like Galaga, so this is kind of a stripped down Galaga. I'm really good at Galaga. I'm not good at many games, but I'm good at that. So this was refreshing because I was very good at this. Yeah, one thing I like about it is that the music, as you kill enemies, as there's less and less enemies on the screen, the music gets more intense. It's very simple music, but it gets more intense. Mm-hmm. It's pretty effective. And when you only have a few enemies on the screen, one or two, they don't stop at the top anymore. They just keep coming down. It's almost like a dogfight. So for the time, really effective. The 2600 port I played, it's not bad. It does the job. It's a bit easier. And they even get the audio right. So, it's 2020. Am I going to play Galaxian if Galaga exists? Probably not. But it was fun to get back into it. Even when I'm in an arcade, Galaxian isn't one I'll go to because there's probably a Galaga. So, Yeah.
So I'm got on my screen here. Starcade episode 34. Are you familiar with Starcade?
Yes.
So right here at about the 15 minute mark, they are playing Galaxian. It appears to be the only appearance of Galaxian in Starcade, at least as far as Google is concerned.
Huh.
And I'm trying to see what score he gets. So you only get to play for like 30 seconds, so his score is maybe a little under 3,000, it looks like. He does not seem to be especially great at Galaxian. He's missing a lot. Now, mind you, I'm sure both of these people, these contestants are now like, engineers for Microsoft or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I played what is essentially the NES version. I actually played the My Arcade version of Galaxian, which is a little miniature cabinet that has... Yeah. That's Galaxian. It has all the artwork. It looks like it looks nice. But it's not playing the arcade ROM. It actually is playing what appears to be the NES ROM. And it's fine. It's perfectly fun. The screen looks pretty good on it. And I actually find it to be a little bit harder than Galaga. I don't know why. Like, you would think Galaga is the more difficult of the two games. But Galaxian, the thing about Galaxian is just tougher for me.
Its hitbox seems different. Seems a little bit bigger than Galaga. To me, it does.
Yeah. And I think your ship moves a little tiny bit slower.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I don't think you can dodge quite as well. And of course, you can't get the double fire.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I do like this game a lot. The thing that's crazy, though, is like, I don't know, a year or so ago, I did an article I called like Atari 7800 versus NES, where I just did like a side-by-side of Atari 7800 games and NES games. And I think both of our games this week were on there. Let me see.
Yeah, here. Yeah, I mentioned that for the next one, yeah.
And Galaga, 7800 was a really, really great system for arcade ports. And if I recall, it's been now a year since I played the 7800 version. But that was like, I think it was a really good port on the 7800. I have to find it.
I feel like, I'm almost positive I played it, but I don't have notes on. I played this... almost after we recorded last episode, so it's been over a week, so I can't even remember. Yeah, and it's not my.
Well, see, there's definitely Galaga on both. Maybe my brain is confused. Galaga is definitely on both, and there does not appear to be a Galaxian on 7800. There is,
on my notes, I guess.
According to AtariProtos.com, they developed both, but decided to only ship Galaga.
That makes sense. Because which one are you going to buy?
Yeah. All right. So I went with Xevious, a game that I first remember seeing in a magazine, you know, like a video game magazine as a kid, and thinking, oh, man, video games have never looked this great before. Mm-hmm. Because the scenery, like Xevious to me is like the scenery in that game is amazing. It's not very complex, but the color palette they picked is just about perfect. Mm-hmm. And like the level of detail, like the forests and the grass are pretty good. Like it's not over the top realistic, but you can definitely imagine you're flying over a forest or a field. And, you know, so whatever the plot of Xevious is, I'm sure there's a backstory of some sort.
Yeah.
But essentially, it seems like you're invading an alien planet. You seem to be the bad guy in this game. So
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Because you're taking out the ground defenses. Like, you have two mm-hmm. shots. One to shoot enemy ships and another to drop bombs. Mm-hmm. So I always took this as you're invading an alien planet and converting them to your ways, whatever those ways may be.
Yeah.
And I played the NES version again, which mechanically is a pretty good port, but also looks kind of awful. And then I went back into the 7800 version again, and I just can't get over how much better the 7800 version looks than the NES version. It should not be that way, right? Like there's no almost no other 7800 games that look better than an NES game, right?
Yeah, and also, I mean, isn't the 7800's graphics technically as good as the NES? It's just the audio that's not?
Yeah, I've heard that before, but I'm not sure. Just because there's not, like, a lot of really awesome-looking 7800 games. Like, there's probably, again, exactly. Like, you could say technically, and only if the developers knew what they were doing and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But, it like, side by side, almost all 7800 games look worse than almost all NES games.
And one thing to note on the 7800 port is that you only had one button on that one. So when you press fire, it does the bomb and it shoots.
So that part,
which,
sure.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, which I kind of liked. I don't like it any less or more. I was fine with it. It's my notes. You know, I wrote it's a simpler game. It's a great port and it plays really well and it looks good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah. I really am a big fan of the 7800 port. And I'll go to my grave insisting the 7800 is really good for arcade ports and maybe not good at anything else.
Yeah, yeah. I played the I started out by playing the MAME version, okay. So the arcade version of this, and 7800 and NES both got really close, and I just think the ship moves a little bit too slow. That's my only real complaint. Really cool big bosses and the 3D walls I forgot about that kind of fly at you. That was a really good effect.
Yeah, yeah, they're pretty amazing.
But the music is so annoying.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that.
Same thing over and over again, which it's weird because Galaxian music is the same thing over and over again, kind of the same thing, but it didn't annoy me. It kind of had purpose.
Yeah, because Xevious is a kind of almost like twinkling kind of sound.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's annoying, sure.
But good game.
Yeah. Yep. Came out right around the time of the great video game crash. So I think maybe it gets overlooked a lot.
Yeah, probably. I mean, probably most people just think of it as an NES game instead of an arcade game, you know. But so, should we tease next games?
Yeah. Yeah, you go ahead. You got a really good one there.
Yeah. So I've been playing a lot of Punch-Out on the Switch. So the online NES port on the Switch, and so I decided to pick that one. So Mike Tyson's Punch-Out or whatever you want to call it, whichever version of this. I don't want to call it port because it's all the same system,
right? It's the same game whichever, with like a palette and name swap exactly. For the last boss.
So whichever one you want to play, Punch-Out.
Yeah, and I'm feeling kind of in a medieval mood today, so I'm gonna go with Defender of the Crown, which has many, many, many different ports.
Yes.
So NES one is usually my go-to one. I actually do own this on CDI. no, it's the only CDI game I own.
Do you have a CDI that works?
I do have a working CDI.
I feel like you got to play it this week.
I would have to hook up my CDI. I unhooked it some time ago. Mm-hmm. I got it for $5. So here's kind of the short version. My wife had this job where she was teaching in Highland Park, Illinois. Nobody knows where that is. If you've ever seen a John Hughes movie, right? That's Highland mm-hmm. Park, Illinois. Like okay. Home Alone, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Breakfast, like all that stuff is in that same rough vicinity. I know mm-hmm. I know Breakfast Club was not actually Highland Park. It was what high school is that? How would you know this? But it's right down that area anyways. So it's a, you know, kind of rich area. And my wife had like this contract, like theater job there. And there were a lot of Saturdays she'd have to go down for like 2 hours. And I'm like, you know what? I'll go along and just do some shopping or, you know, whatever in town. So we can just kind of hang out on the car ride. Mm-hmm. And there was a thrift store in, I don't call it downtown Highland Park, but let's say a street off downtown, whatever you would call that. And it was a little thrift store. And I'm like, I bet Highland Park people throw out really good stuff and don't even know it. Like, that was sort of my logic. And I go,
because there's some money there.
Oh, go ahead.
Right? Because there's some money there, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Like, again, imagine the house from Home Alone, right?
Yeah.
That's Highland Park.
It's insane. Like, it's a mansion.
It's a mansion. Yeah. Right. That's the area. So I'm like, these Highland Park people have got to throw out some good stuff. So, yeah, I go to this little thrift shop, and in the back, there's, like, an electronics section that's just a wall of, like, VCRs and stereo equipment, right? Just, like, mm-hmm. 1,000 tape decks, right, which you're never going to use, and piles of VCRs. But there, just stacked between, like, VCRs is a Philips CDI. Because they got it and said, I don't know, is this a VCR? Is it a disc player? I don't know, maybe it's a... I don't know. Let's put it back video for the VCR.
Yeah.
And yeah, $5.
Wow.
So I said, well, I will purchase this rich person's CDI. And I kept going back to that store like every time I was in that area just to see what, and I never found anything else good there again. But I was expecting to find like 3DOs and that kind of stuff, you know, overpriced
totally,
systems.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Neo Geo or something.
Yeah, so then I had to like go buy a CDI game. The CDI game cost me quite a bit more than I paid for the system. I have bootlegs of the Zelda games too.
I never need to play those. I think I played once at like one at Circuit City or something like that.
Those don't exist. Circuit City is definitely the kind of place that would sell a CDI.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Reason they are out of business. All right. Hey, if people want to comment on next episode's games, how do they do that?
Please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. You know, we do this podcast because, I mean, I don't know about you, but it's an excuse for me to talk about retro games. I don't have many people I could talk about retro games with. So I would love you guys to... share your insights with us. So if you play Punch-Out, Defender of the Crown, Galaxian, Xevious, any game we've covered or any game you're playing, or if you're up to anything retro, email at retrogameclub.com, or sorry, email at retrogameclub.net. And we also have Facebook. You could get to at facebook.retrogameclub.net if you want to avoid everything else on Facebook. And we have a Twitter, and that is what...
why are you asking me?
Yes, that is RGC. It's at RGC podcast. And Zach runs both social media sites. So, thank you, Zach.
So real quick, just to close the loop on this, cause I know people are anxious. Highland Park, you have, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, specifically, you know, that scene where they're in the garage and, Cameron kicks his father's car until it goes flying.
Yes.
That's Highland Park.
Yes.
Weird Science, mm-hmm. 16 Candles, Uncle Buck, Home Alone, and then parts of Ordinary People and Risky Business.
All big houses.
Yes, all that. And one of those houses had a CDI that I now own.
But I was just going to finish up by saying, and also please give us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to us, because it really does help.
All right. So the password topic was inspired by the fact that we talked about passwords on social media. And I guess we asked out there, what is the worst password system? I was going to answer by it's sort of a two-parter. Any password system by Falcom, a company I otherwise like a lot. Like if you play EastBook 1 and 2 on TurboGrafx, you can, right, there's a password system for it. It also has a save battery. But the password to use if you want to, like, I don't know, share games, because you couldn't, like, you couldn't bring your memory card to your friend's house or something, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't remember that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, go on.
But it's horrible. It's a mile long. It's a massive password that, you know, uses a lot of, like, lowercase and uppercase I and J characters, so you can't quite tell what letter everything is. And they also made a game called Tombs and Treasure that was on the NES. And there's virtually nothing in that game you have to save other than, like, how many dungeons you've beat, basic. I mean, there's a little bit of inventory, but there's not a lot to save. And that password system is, like, as long as War and Peace. And then I wrote, honorable mention, anything that doesn't use letters.
You mean like Mega Man?
Like Mega Man. Where it uses like, if you ever play like Side Pocket or Minnesota Fats Pool Legend, I know you're big on those games. like their passwords are like balls. You know, so it'll be like 8-ball, 7-ball, 6-ball, but they're really small. So you, in the list, like you can't read them. I'll just put it that way. Like you kind of have to know what color ball is to know the password system.
Yeah, because I was going to say, Mega Man's is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's a grid.
But, yeah. Right. And then Henry T. says, you have to write a novel if you play Tricky Kick for TurboGrafx.
Okay. Haven't played Tricky Kick. I even own a physical copy. Upper and lowercase passwords in Alex Kidd in High Tech World, because you can't read them.
Yeah, makes sense. And, Zach writes in also that, Metroid, because of all the uppercase and lowercase and question marks and hyphens and spaces as a kid, it was just too much. And you get the O's and zeros mixed up.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like that, at least on, like, the Switch, when you have to enter, like, a Nintendo points card or something, they have eliminated all the ambiguous characters from that. Because I don't want to give Nintendo my credit card, because I don't know how they're storing it. I have some theories on how they're storing it, but I know.
Because they're so great on online.
I mean, you know, Nintendo's not like a company that I associate. I mean, like, they're good at making games. I don't necessarily know that they have thought about, like, how to do PCI compliance and stuff. So, not that anyone understands what I just said. So, I don't actually know if they know how to store credit cards well. I just know that I think I can get them to send me my password in plain text. So maybe I don't want to give them my credit card. All right. So I'll get the first email here from Majors. It says he appreciates your OCD over audio quality, which is good. And he says he's kind of the same way with arcade cabinets. You know, in fixing arcade cabinets.
I had to stop being that way with arcade cabinets because it gets too expensive and I see every minor detail wrong. So I just had to let go. They're old.
Yeah. Pronunciation of Gradius. Is it Gradius or Gradius? I don't know where that extra E is coming from in the second one.
Gradius.
How are you pronouncing it?
I say Gradius.
Yeah, that sounds right. But he says, Alonzo's pronounced a great E-S. I don't see where that E's coming from.
We're both from the Midwest.
I just know that, like, when I listen to the Retro Hour a lot. I talk about their podcast on here quite a bit. And they always end the word Amiga with an R somehow.
I mean, a lot of English kind of dialects, if it ends with an A, there's an R in there.
There's an R in there, yeah. And that's when I'm always like, where are they getting that? I'm sure when they hear Americans say ZX Spectrum, they chuck their phone, you know, out the car window or something, right?
Yes. Yes.
Let's see. So Sonic Movie, you mentioned he had all the other gaming podcasts that he listens to have talked about the Sonic Movie and they all had kind of similar thoughts to yours. And he thinks critics gave it poor reviews because they didn't set their expectations low enough. Because if you've suffered through lots and lots of video game movies, you know, Sonic is actually pretty good by comparison.
Yeah, and it's a kid's movie, kind of, mostly. So rate it as if you're watching a kid's movie, you know? So I agree.
To Genesis versus TurboGrafx palettes. How the TurboGrafx palette is actually, he and the other TurboGrafx community often think the Genesis looks much more brown, is the term they use, than the TurboGrafx. I will say, from playing with Genesis palettes, there is a wide range of like red brown colors on there, and like there's no like complete, like when I say pure white, I mean like FFFFFF, like pure, like no, there's no like white color that's totally white on the Genesis either. Like the lightest tone of white is actually kind of like slightly gray.
That's weird.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, man. But that's why, like, you don't see, like, if there's snow in a Genesis game, it's usually blue. Because you have to, they have to add blue to kind of offset the fact that the snowflake is kind of gray.
I'll have to pay attention to that next time.
Yeah, I never thought about it until I started playing with Genesis programming. Never occurred to me that Genesis doesn't have, like, white, and it has a ton of brown colors, the way it works out.
Weird.
Tiger LCD handhelds. So, yeah, so, you know, back in the day, it was like the poor kid's Game Boy. But nowadays, you can get a Fire tablet for basically nothing. So, don't know who these are for. So, basically, it's commenting that you would not buy your kids one of these LCDs nowadays. You'd buy them a cheap Fire tablet that had ads in it.
Yes.
He really enjoyed the interview with Arabian Prince and hearing the term Trash 80 and going to Egghead Software. Yeah, I miss good old Egghead. You've been to an Egghead, right?
Oh, yeah. That's where we got our first Apple IIgs from.
Yeah. Long gone. And then games of the episode. Much like us, really prefers Galaga to Galaxian. And it was just when he started going to arcades, Galaxian was already shoved in the back of the arcade because Galaga was out. And
makes sense.
Then he mentions for Xevious, and I did not know this because I didn't do all my homework, that there is a PC Engine version of Xevious. And recommends that one a lot. He said it also has a new mode and new music and a visual story.
There you go. I'm going to have to look at this one.
Yeah, this is on CD. You not say whether it's CD or or chip. I don't have a converter. I only have a Turbo Duo, so I can play CD games. Mm-hmm. And I haven't bought like a converter. I never got around to buying like, a chip converter for it. Looks like it is a chip game, which is too bad. But I bet there's no way I could possibly play that though.
Yeah. And then Trash Turkey writes in saying he really loves the show, meaning the podcast. I guess we hinted at a East deep dive episode as a topic, and he would love if we did that. He never finished one of the games, but wants to. He just doesn't have the patience for the really, really long games. And I can totally understand with it. And we probably will in the near future do an East deep dive episode.
Yeah, I would say,
because we are both huge fans.
Yeah, yeah. And he says if he wants to know if there's a recommendation for the one that's shortest. And also good. So the thing is, like, the newer games all have different difficulty levels. And most of them, if you play them on easy, they're fairly short. But, like, I would say if you don't like really story-heavy games, then the one called East Origin is probably the best one.
I was going to recommend that, too.
Yeah, because you can start it, you can put it on easy mode if you don't want to do a lot of grinding. You know, if you basically get bored of, like, fighting monsters to gain levels. You can just put it on easy. You probably have, I've never played it on easy, but even on like normal, there's really not that much grinding. So I imagine easy, there's almost none. And the story is very, very light. It's very minimal story compared to the other games.
And it's on every system, and it's pretty cheap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's on Steam, every of course, system. And good old games and all that stuff. Yeah.
Like Vita, yeah, PS4. I think it's on Switch. Yeah. And another hint on all or most East games is if you get to a boss that's too hard, just go back and grind another level or two, mm-hmm. and you will stomp over that boss.
Well, and I don't remember if East Origin does this, but a lot of other Falcom games from the same era will do like a weakened boss and retry if you lose to a boss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if East Origin does that, because honestly, I've never lost to an East Origin boss. It's not a very hard game.
I don't even think I lost to the end boss. I think I just...
No, the last boss was actually not especially tough, if I remember right. I think it's one of those games where the second to last boss is harder than the last boss.
Yep. Yep.
And if you really enjoy it, you can actually play through it. Like, there's basically... Well, I'm not going to spoil the game, because this is at the beginning. There are two different lead characters in the game, and you can choose which one to play as, and that decision's locked in. And they each have a different story, and I've done both of the stories. Unfortunately, I did them on different systems, which wasn't very smart. And if you play through both of their stories, then it unlocks a third story that you can do.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's like a third character that then you can play through as.
That is something I do not have time to do.
Right. So the problem is, like, I didn't play through them on the same system, because...
Yeah.
It was always like I got it on... Unlimited Run Games for PS4, and I replayed it again, and then I'm like, oh, that's right. My save game's on Vita or whatever the other one was on.
Yeah. Well, thanks for both those emails, and we have a Facebook, too. Someone responds about howlongtobeat.com. Brandon O says he finds it really, really, really helpful. Mm-hmm.
To decide what game to play next, which... I look at it sometimes if I'm like, okay, I got to take a business trip and I can be on a plane for like 10 hours in the next week and in the hotel room bored for 2 hours a night. And I might punch in a few games I'm considering just to see, like, is there one that I could finish over that duration?
Yeah.
And then Luke mentions Tire Electronics and Gaming Handhelds. Hopefully they'll be on the good end of the spectrum. As opposed to the actual original Tiger ones.
My guess is they won't be. Because, I mean, how would you do that?
Yeah, I think they're just the same game, right? I don't think they're improving them at all.
Money grab. But, again, if anyone has anything they'd like to talk to us about, email at retrogameclub.net or our Facebook or our Twitter.
Yes. Or if you have a cool project that you want to plug... send us an email, because we'd be more than happy to have you on the show to talk about your cool project. A retro game-related project. If this is your, like, survivalist shelter or something, we're probably not interested unless there's an arcade in your survivalist shelter.
Yes.
Then we want to talk to you.
And send photos. All right.
All right.
I think we got through episode 4.
Yeah, so thanks for listening.